on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our February 26, 2026 edition of Invest Talk. I am host Justin Klein, and my objective here is to unpack the news of the day. A lot going on. We had NVIDIA earnings after hours yesterday, and it was a bit of a flop despite beating estimates. And this is another good example of you can't just rely on those headline numbers. It's really about how the market reacts. And ultimately, that will determine future direction typically and tells you a lot more about where the stock is headed than that, like I said, those headline numbers. So this is what kind of drew the market down today. And we had more interesting news after hours when it came to Block, the old Square. They laid off a bunch of workers. And, you know, the question is that the AI predictions making landfall, or is this just a right sizing of the workforce after massively expanding their workforce during COVID? And I would say it's a little bit of both. So we can talk about that. We can talk about whatever's on your mind during this hour. That's what this hour is for. It's for you, for me to hear what you have to say, questions that are on your mind, and for me to give you my perspective and the data that I have in front of me, the data that I have in my head, developed over 25 years of investment experience. So that's what this hour is for. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now.
Hey, this is Don from Durham, North Carolina. Thanks so much for the show. I'm interested in what you think of EMR, Emerson Electric. Recently, I like the company. I'm just a little nervous about whether it's really going to keep going or you think it's going to probably pull back. So I'm looking for an entry point for EMR. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
All right. Looking at Emerson Electric, EMR is the symbol. And this is another good example of why you can't just take the name at face value, because while Emerson is certainly a very solid industrial name and it does have its roots in electric and in electricity and everything surrounding the industrial applications of electricity, they're much more than that these days. They have they put in control systems, intelligent control systems, software control systems, as well as they have measurement and analytical systems as well. And they have an automation side of their business as well. So it's not a pure play automation company like a Rockwell, but it does have a significant component of that. And I think that's important to delineate right now, especially as AI is taking off and, you know, applying that to robotics is certainly something a trend that's probably not changing. So I generally like this. It is in a solid uptrend. Relative strength is 78. So as you can see, it's pretty much outperforming. Earnings are expected to be up 8% this year, 10% next year, and those estimates continue to go higher. Now it's trading a bit of market premium, but I think that's certainly justified because their expertise is becoming more and more valuable. And you can see that with its operating margins near an all-time high. Actually, at an all-time high, excuse me. So clearly, they have some strengths that the market is liking. They have a very clean balance sheet, only $10 billion in debt on an $85 billion market cap. And free cash flow now is at about $2.5 billion. And fairly steady. So I like that. So I have really no issues with owning Emerson. You know, is it the best automation and robotics company to hang your hat on? Probably not, but I like the diversity of their business overall. And I'm going to give Emerson a thumbs up. That's E M are. Now, it's Thursday, and we are here to tackle whatever is on your mind. We have a lot to cover over the next 45 minutes or so. And what's on my mind, and probably a lot of investors' mind, is gold. Gold's $5,000 basically plateau that it's been at for the last couple of months. And gold is gathering momentum. It's been a little bumpy lately, but overall the trend is higher. Geopolitical tensions are on the rise. Inflation concerns are not changing. And the traditional safe haven of treasuries are being tested. And you're starting to see gold being treated as the new safe haven as geopolitical instability continues to rise. So we're going to look into deeper into what's going on in that market and whether or not it can regain its strong upward momentum in the coming months. We also have other topics on the docket. We'll look at the commercial real estate industry and how those loans that have been kind of kicked, the can has been kicked for a number of years, really since 2023. Delinquencies have been on the rise, going from a low of around 1.5% during 2022 when rates were rock bottom to all the way to up to 12.5% today. So what does that mean for that industry? And then also insider ownership of stock. When they buy a stock, is that good over the short term or the long term or not? We'll dig into that. We also have voice bank calls. One is on the VanEck Uranium and Nuclear ETF, NLR, as well as Sencora, COR is the symbol on that one. So we'll get to those voice bank questions and also your questions that came in via the comment section on our Invest Talk YouTube channel as well. And with that said, I want to hear from you, your live listeners, even if you're listening after hours. Great. Call 888-99-CHART, leave a message. We're answered on a future show, but we also love those live calls. If you call us now, you will get to the front of the line. Now we're going into a break. Please remember you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestTalk voice bank. And if you're listening via our live stream or possibly an AM1220 in the Bay Area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART. Hang on next because I will be talking about today's market activity.
When you tell your friends about InvestTalk and they ask you why you listen, let them know there are many reasons, and one is parallel investing. From KPP Financial and InvestTalk host Justin Klein. Parallel investing means Justin invests right alongside KPP Financial clients. He makes the same trade for KPP Financial on the same day, at the same price, and the same percentages as KPP clients. There's no front running and no special treatment. In this way, Justin and KPP Financial share the same risks and the same potential for success. Parallel investing aligns the interests of Justin and KPP Financial with those of his clients. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your questions about parallel investing. And you can learn more anytime at investtalk.com. Now, with 62 million downloads, InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, we are thrilled to announce our third annual InvestTalk Market Madness Contest. Yes, it is that time. Now, instead of basketball brackets, we'll be watching companies perform head-to-head in an epic showdown. It's our third year doing it. InvestTalk participants can compete for a $1,000 grand prize and demonstrate their market prowess by locking in their stock victory predictions. Excuse me. Now, to get this, if the contest winner is also following the InvestTalk YouTube channel, we'll bump that grand prize up to $1,500. So if you're ready to test your skills in this unique competition, don't wait. It is free to join. Just visit investtalk.com and submit your bracket predictions to enter. While the clock is ticking, head over to our website and search InvestTalk Market Madness to fill out your bracket before the deadline on March 18th at 11:59 p.m. Let's go look at the market today. It was a negative day overall, but mainly that was driven by earnings from NVIDIA. And this is a great example of market expectations, at least top line being beat, even bottom line being beat ahead of consensus. but the market reacted negatively. Now, it wasn't a terrible reaction. NVIDIA down about 5.5% on the day. Not crazy, but considering a $10 billion ramp up in revenue from the previous quarter, 77% year-over-year growth in Q4. It guided to 75% gross margins and expected very high margins going forward. So everything looked good. Guidance was good, but the market reaction was negative, and it brought down a lot of companies within the hardware space in AI. You're talking about names like Broadcom and Micron and AMD, Intel, Amphenol, etc. These are all names that were down a bit today. But the rest of the market was mostly green. You had companies like Meta, Oracle, IBM, CRM. And that was really the driver, I think, of that part of the market being better, which was earnings from Salesforce, that's CRM. And it was a bit better than expected. So even though the guidance was fairly light and they are worried a bit about AI disruption, that was kind of baked in. And so it wasn't as bad as expected because the stock was down nearly 28% year to date. And so it bounced back, and a lot of other names within the space rallied in conjunction with it. So that was the positive in markets. So kind of a different flavor than you've seen all year, where hardware names were rallying and software names were falling. You had a bit of a counter trend rally and sell off in both of those sectors. Retail struggled. Amazon and Walmart were both down about 1%. Same with Costco. You had some strength out of, what is this? What sector is this? Communication services. So that was strong. Industrials were strong as well. Waste management up 2.5%. So kind of a mixed bag. And you did see the Dow eke out a bit of a gain. S&P was down about 0.5%. NASDAQ down a little over 1% on the day. Treasuries were a bit firmer. Yields down 3 to 4 basis points. So continued worries about the deflationary impact of AI and a weaker economy, I think, overall. And let's see what else. Dollar index was up 0.1%. Gold finished down 0.6%. Silver down 4.4% on the day. Bitcoin futures down 2.6 after jumping 7.2% on Wednesday. WTI did settle down again about 0.3% as looks, there's some headlines that U.S.-Iran talks are a bit constructive, even though I still think they'll probably do something on that front, but we shall see. That was kind of the market today. We did have initial jobless claims coming in at 212,000 consensus, right in line with consensus, although the prior week was upwardly revised a little bit. So labor market continues to be kind of so-so. Let's pivot over and check on a question that came in via the Invest Talk. Actually, an iTunes review. Okay, I love these. Love and appreciate our 5-star reviews over on iTunes. JoJo says, a few days ago, I took position in Coke. C-O-K-E. C-O-K-E. There we go. Your thoughts on their outlook and debt? Great question. What does their debt look like? Something that most people don't pay attention to. But when you're looking at these consumer durable, consumer staple companies, the debt tends to matter a lot because they pay dividends and people like those dividends. But are those dividends sustainable with a level of debt? For this company, pretty small amount of debt, only about $2.5 billion in net debt with free cash flow, about $600 million. Their payout ratio is only about 20%. Meaning they have plenty of money to left over to buy back shares, to pay down their debt, maintain their debt, et cetera. I see no issues really with it. And the technicals are very strong. The relative strength is 91. Last quarter revenues up 9%, earnings up 17%. So the market certainly is rewarding this name. And frankly, money is flowing out of consumer discretionary into consumer staples like Coke. So I generally like this. Let me take a look here. I know there's a lot of difference. So this is more of a bottler and distributor. So it's certainly doing much better than Coke itself. So I like it. I like the trend. Now it's overbought. I will say this. It is overbought. Came back in today, down about a third of 1%. But if this can get back into the 170, 175 range, right now we're trading right around $200 per share. That's probably where I'd pick up COKE. Now we're moving into a break. And next, we're going to take a live call. Richard from Cupertino. Hang on. You will be next.
In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
We're going to go talk to Richard, as I said, in Cupertino, looking at Bank of Nova Scotia, BNS. You own it or looking to buy it?
I own it. I've got 550 shares in my retirement account. Mm-hmm. Kind of worried about Canada because you got part of Canada, very socialistic, and you got Alberta grumping and wanting to become a 51st state. So I've done well with it. It pays just over 4.1% dividend, but I'm just wondering if it's run its course and I could probably go find something better.
Well, the stock price doesn't look like it's slowing down. I mean, it's just grinding higher, and frankly, that's healthy as opposed to, you know, some big quick spike. And so I wouldn't be quick to hold it. Now, it's had a big run and, you know, never know where the eventual top is. So it is probably prudent maybe to trim a little, and based on what that full asset allocation looks like, what type of exposure do you have to financials, to Canada itself, et cetera, and how much do you really need the yield also, because, you know, that's part of this picture. So I'm not in a rush to sell it, but it is prudent for you to start thinking about maybe trimming the position to some degree.
I actually thought of maybe just selling half of it and see what happens.
Well, I wouldn't say so. This is an important concept that everybody should internalize. If you're going to make a change to the portfolio, you need to have a plan, not just in that one position, but where is this money going? What do I want that portfolio at the end of this rebalancing or end of this trimming to look like? Do I need more industrials? Do I need more foreign exposure? Do I need more materials? What am I going to do with this money? Am I trying to de-risk? Am I trying to go into maybe more treasuries or maybe corporate bonds or whatever? You need to have a plan for that. Don't just sell it 50. Why 50%? Why not 25%? Why not 75%? It's where you want the end portfolio goal to look like. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. My first thought is, since it's in retirement, if I sell half, I can take my required minimum already, mm-hmm. get that out of my hair, mm-hmm. invest it in my regular portfolio account. So, mm-hmm.
but yeah, if that's going. Yeah, I mean, if that 50% roughly is equal to your RMD that you need to take anyway, and this is overweight in your portfolio, or financials are overweight in your portfolio, you know, that's a good reason to potentially sell half, or, you know, some of it to start that rebalancing process. So yes, I think that's a good thought process. But overall, you need to have an asset allocation goal. That's what we do for all of our different strategies. We have particular targets for positions, for sector allocation, based on the current market conditions, based on risk that we're trying to take in the portfolio, et cetera. And everyone out there should be doing the exact same thing to some degree. And so when you're making a change, you know, is this moving me closer to my broader goal or not? You know, because a lot of times, what if you have one gold position that's 10% of your portfolio, which might be a lot, but you want 15%. In gold, right? That means you probably need to trim elsewhere and add to your gold position. I'm just using that as an example. So this is the way to think about it, is start kind of big picture, and then you focus on individual names like this. Now, what I will say about Bank of Nova Scotia and Canada itself is you know, there's not a lot of banks in Canada. And that's true for a lot of countries. We're kind of an anomaly where we have thousands of banks, both small and large here in the United States. And I think over time, that's probably going to continue to consolidate to smaller and smaller number. But that's already there in Canada. And so in many ways, these banks are utilities. So I don't think there's a ton of risk in the short term. Eventually, long term, who knows what happens with Canada. But don't, I wouldn't be super aggressive in selling it because the trends are still positive.
Well, you know, the nice thing is with my brokerage, I can move it over and still get 4-point-something% interest with the Feds keeping the rates up pretty high. You know, I'm not going to lose a lot.
Yeah, but that, but remember, that's short term. You know, if the Fed, if Trump gets his way, right, they're going to probably cut rates pretty aggressively over the next couple of years, and that 4% short term money market rate that you're getting now, or high threes, is probably going to dip probably below three before, you know, the Trump's term is out. So that's, I wouldn't think of it that way. Don't think of it, oh, I can get this yield in treasuries. That's not the way to think about this, because that can change. Whereas Bank of Nova Scotia, they're probably not going to be cutting their dividend materially anytime soon. So once again, think of it more in the broader asset allocation. Have a plan and start to move yourself towards that plan. And this could be part of that adjustment.
Appreciate your time. Thank you for your help.
Thank you for the call. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this story. The 24/7 stock market revolution. Trading never sleeps. The traditional 4 p.m. closing bell is becoming obsolete as stocks transform to 24/7 digital cash with around-the-clock trading. This fundamental shift in market structure is changing how investors think about timing, liquidity, and global market dynamics. So that story is tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls now on 888-99-CHART.
Phone lines never close. And now, Justin Klein is here taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point today is about gold's $5,000 mountain. And what you've seen lately is a bit of a bumpy ride, a back and forth kind of choppy period, which should not shock anybody. Gold went a bit parabolic a couple months ago, and you had the Kevin Warsh announcement, and things have started to become, like I said, a bit more volatile. Even today, you had a bit of volatility, but overall, it is constructive. So let's talk a bit about, can gold continue to go higher? Now let's step back. And after surging for many years, markets are starting to drive price, meaning investors are starting to drive the price of gold. And there's a story behind it. Everyone loves a good story. Markets tend to move based on stories. And we know that global risks are rising, uncertainty is rising. That feels a lot like the 1970s. Now, gold has long been a safe haven asset, but it's never been more so since really the 1970s. For roughly 30, 40 years, once the gold boom broke in the 1970s, gold kind of correlated with real interest rates. But that pattern has broken starting in 2023. And the main driver was a huge increase in purchases of gold by central banks, shifting away from dollar assets, mainly because the U.S. weaponized sanctions against Russia over the Ukraine war. Now, that was 2023. 2024, but 2025, central banks kept buying, but they certainly slowed down their purchases. But demand exploded from investors, and not just U.S. investors, mainly Chinese investors. Now, there were some U.K. investors, there were some Indian investors, there were also some U.S. investors. But like I said, mainly it was what are called retail anti-investors. They really bought into the buying spree. And that's really what catapulted gold much, much higher over the past 12 months or so. Now, relative to inflation, the price of gold is now 5 standard deviations above its historic norm. So it has gotten a bit ahead of itself, you have to say, if you're looking based on historical norms, at least that historical norm. But it's hard to see what would slow this down. Why? Because the narrative only continues to build on itself. Do you think geopolitical tensions are ratcheting down or up? I think it's pretty clear it's up. Do you think that the train of government debasement or fiat debasement around the world is going to shift? Do you think that governments are going to suddenly become conservative in their spending habits? Unlikely. Just look here domestically. Doge was this big campaign promise and it went nowhere. So the dollar debasement strategy is clearly on. And liquidity more broadly remains plentiful. Governments need low interest rates, plenty of liquidity to keep their bond markets functioning. So people are looking for places to put that money. And even after the surge from investors in buying gold and gold-related assets, they still hold relatively little in their portfolios in aggregate. I think it went from something like 2 to 3% of retail investor assets. And in the 70s, it went, I think, close to 10%. So there's plenty of room to go. Now, on an inflation-adjusted basis, over the past 10 years, gold's up threefold. Threefold. In the 70s, it was up 12-fold. So it kind of depends on what metric you're looking at and what narrative could shift. I am not seeing it. Now, I'll be happy to admit when I do. And frankly, the market trends will probably tell us before it actually does. It will peak. It will look relatively weak for some reason. And we'll likely find out later. That is maybe central banks pulling back, maybe geopolitics calming down, or maybe the dollar resurging. But ultimately, when you get this near-term volatility in gold, it's healthy. It's constructive, as long as no major long-term trends break lower, which so far you're not seeing any of that. Now, as you probably know by now, we receive listener questions from the comment section of our Invest Talk YouTube channel. And Rowdy 1234567 8 says, I know you have owned ticker NXST in the past, but due to the Tegna merger, I'm thinking about exiting now or the day of the merger. The market seems to be bullish at the merger, so I just wanted to see what your thoughts on NXT and your perspective on this post-merger. Okay, NXST, that is a name that we had owned in the past. We ended up moving on, but it did continue to do fairly well, and it's now at a 52-week high, $245 per share. I don't know about the Tegna merger. Let's see. It was endorsed by President Trump. Let me see this. Okay, next are plans to buy. Okay. So I don't know much about this. I frankly wish I looked into it. I have not. But for everyone out there, what Nexstar does is they own a lot of local stations. So if you have cable and you have your ABC station that airs local news, for example, they're the ones that kind of run that. Now they do have other networks like True Crime and Quest, and they have some, I believe, a YouTube channel. I think they own The Hill, if I remember correctly. So their market cap is about $3.4 billion. Now, they have a decent amount of debt, so that's something to worry about. Free cash flow for Tegna is positive. You know, I don't mind this acquisition. It seems fine to me. I would probably continue to hold it because the momentum is strong. So I would keep it. Now let's go pivot to another voicemail question now.
Hello, gentlemen. My name is Adrian from Texas, and I'm calling about Cencora, ticker symbol COR. I have a small position currently and was thinking about adding on to it, but wanted your advice on if this is a good price or if it's currently overvalued. Thank you very much.
Cencora, distributes brand name and generic drugs, over-the-counter healthcare products, and home healthcare supplies. I like that business. I like that business. Healthcare does have some nice secular tailwinds, over-the-counter products, especially not having to worry about the pressure from reimbursements, healthcare company reimbursements, free cash flow about $3.6 billion on a market cap of $71 billion, very little debt in its balance sheet, very high return on invested capital around 17%, and that's very consistent. And what are they doing with that free cash flow? They're buying back shares. I like that. They pay a dividend. Are they raising their dividend? Yep, they're consistently raising their dividend. Earnings expect to be up 10% this year, 11% next year. Trades at about a market multiple. I like it. Cencora. Very simple business, consistent business, good profitability. I see no problems with Cencora. COR is the symbol. Now let's play another listener question now.
Hi, Duncan from New York. Thank you for all that you do. I am just trying to get into more of the foreign or emerging markets, and I have come across two ETFs I'm having a hard time trying to choose between. This is for Japan. The first one is FLJP, and the second one is JPXN. Now, learning from your show, I know that I should go after the ETF that has the lowest price. FLJP has like a 0.09% fee, which is great. And GPXN has a 0.48% fee. But doing a little bit of my research, it seems like that JPXN has this like screen where they can actually make sure that they don't have any dead weight stocks like how FLJP might have. And I guess I'm just wondering if it's like now worth it now. You guys keep on discussing now. Japan is starting to grow. More investors might be interested in it. So looking forward to the podcast. Have a great day. Bye.
All right. Now, first off, what I want to say is, yes, the expense ratio matters. Does matter. But it should not be your first screen. It should not be your first consideration. Now, maybe top three, top five considerations, sure. But you really want to say is, what allocation do I want to have? What asset exposure do I want to have? Now, you're looking to expand to Japan or get exposure to Japan. I like that. But you are looking at one that's more of an index. That's the Franklin FTSE Japan ETF. And that's why its expense ratio is 9 basis points, very low. Versus the iShares JapanX Nikkei 400. So I would be interested to see what that filter looks like. If I'm going to take your word for it that there are more, a better screening process to get rid of the companies that are worse. Now, let me take a look at its profitability. They're both about C. Yeah, see, I'm looking at their return on invested capital for FLJP. It's about 10.3. For JPXN, it's about 10.85. So it's a very minor increase. Cash return on that is about 68% versus 141% for FLJP. You know, I'm just not seeing a major difference. And I'm not seeing the requisite valuation screens that make this other one look attractive, or profit metric screens that make it look attractive. I'm looking at all these on Morningstar, just some of the metrics here. And frankly, it doesn't look better. In fact, by most measurements, FLJP has better historical earnings growth, sales growth, cash flow growth, all of that. So whatever screen JPXN is coming up with, not working very well. Okay. So I would go with, in this case, the lower fee, because I'm not seeing an advantage for JPXN. And if I pull up let me go look at a 10-year return, about 9.78 for JPXN versus, this one is 5 years. So 5 year on the first one is 9 versus 9.07. Yeah. So their 5 year return's about the same. I would just stick with FLJP, lower cost and the same, if not better, returns. Let's go take a live call from Bill in California, looking at CIEN.
Yeah, hi, Justin. I bought some of those a few weeks ago, and it's up like 30%. You know, I just wonder how you see it, their overall financials. And, you know, I was thinking of adding some more, but not today or on a strong pullback. But I don't know. That's why I'm asking you.
Yeah, well, I still down day today. This is in the realm of AI infrastructure stocks, and it's been doing well because of that. Obviously, it's gone from about $60 per share back in April of last year, April low, to $341 at the close today. So massive surge, earnings, it's trading at very high multiples. I think this has gotten a little ahead of itself. Earnings are supposed to be $6.90 next year on a $341 stock. That's a bit rich for my blood. So I would not be buying more here, especially at these NVIDIA earnings, that there's going to be a bit of a setback and, you know, maybe market expectations are reset a little bit. I would not be buying here. I'd want to pull back. Let me give you a number here. If this is a localized top, then I would say a number that I would pick up more shares would be down around 250, 245 in that range.
Okay. Okay. Good to know. All right. Good. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks for the call. That was Cien, C-I-E-N. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin. Nick from Pennsylvania calling with a question about sector ETFs. Specifically, ticker symbol NLR, that's November Lima Romeo. This has done well for me over the past year or so, to the point that I'm wondering if I should trim. My understanding is that an individual stock should make up about 3% of a portfolio, but I'm wondering if an ETF like this should be higher or not. Could you please give me your thoughts? Thanks in advance. Really appreciate the show. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks for the call. And you're right, that 3%, we thought you can go up to 5% individual name, that's fine. But the ETFs are, and mutual funds are not considered individual companies because they are well diversified themselves. This name itself has 25 holdings, which is pretty low for an ETF of any kind, but still it's well diversified. And so this can go up to at least 10% of the portfolio, even higher if you want. And it would be considered kind of a hybrid industrial, energy, and utility ETF, because it has about 30% utilities, 13% industrials, 55% in energy. Its top holding is Cameco. That's a name that we've owned for some time for clients. And its fourth largest holding is BWX Technologies, another name that we have owned for clients for some time. But you are getting exposure to a lot of other names within the space, names like Kazatomprom, which is one of the largest uranium producers in the world. And then a lot of junior miners, that junior uranium miners like Energy Fuels, et cetera, some small modular reactor companies like Oklo. So you're getting a pretty diversified portfolio here, and you're not hitching your ride to any one particular name. Now, the trends in NLR are pretty good. It still remains in a positive uptrend. It's not overbought. It's just consolidating, and frankly, it's overall fairly constructive, and I see no reason to dump it. So if you're just looking for broad exposure to the uranium and nuclear energy patch, this is a fine ETF for that, and you can go, like I said, well above the 3% threshold. Thanks for the call. Let's talk about insider purchases, and this was a great study. They looked at 1,400 publicly disclosed insider purchases at S&P 500 companies over the past 5 years. Talking about 327 purchases that spent a collective $3.7 billion, who each spent more than $100,000 each. And most of these purchases took place after the share price had declined over the previous month. Now, the question is, should you follow these purchases? And the conclusion was fairly simple. But over the short term, yes, shares typically climbed a median of 2% a month after these insider purchases. But then the recoveries tended to taper off, and there really wasn't a strong indication one way or another. Some went up big, some rolled over and continued to decline. About 60% of trades did better 1 month later. Things like Tim Cook's purchase of Nike. He's on the board. And Nike shares fell after earnings in December. Fell about 11%. And he bought about $2.9 million worth. A month later, Nike shares had climbed pretty considerably. But as of today, it's roughly flat from those December lows. So the momentum is not exactly, actually, it's actually still up. I apologize. Yeah, the December lows are around $57. So it climbed up to around $67 and then it's kind of tailed off since. So overall, that was so far a good buy, but you could see easily Nike rolling back over and breaking those December lows. So I thought this was a very interesting study because it really unpacks what a lot of people try to do. They try to follow the insiders. And once again, that can work over a short period of time, but the durability of that bounce is always up to the trajectory of the business, the valuation that's being paid, etc. So it's one piece in the puzzle, but it should not be the end-all be-all whether insiders are purchasing or not. Well, I'm Justin Klein, and I want to remind you about parallel investing from KPP Financial, where we do what's good for you and for me. When we make a purchase for our clients, we make the same trade for ourselves in the same day, same price, same percentage, no front running, no special treatment. We invest right alongside our clients. We share the same risks and potential for success. And you can learn more by heading over to investtalk.com. And please tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which they can find anytime at iTunes or Spotify, or check out our YouTube channel as well. And be sure to rate and review us on iTunes as well. Don't forget to sign up for the InvestTalk Market Madness Contest. Get all the details now at investtalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.